Hello and welcome to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Harditz, and today we'll be breaking down all 16 Week 3 matches with a focus on providing you all with some actionable fantasy football takeaways. Hope everyone had a great time watching football despite all those injuries in Week 2, but we are on to Week 3. So joining me today, you've probably heard him a couple times already if you've been checking out this podcast, but PFF's own Andrew Erickson. Andrew, how's it going, man?
I'm doing good, man. I didn't get hurt this weekend, so that's always a positive. And, you know, most of my fantasy teams made it through. I was on team draft Ezekiel Elliott at number 2, so that's looking pretty smart right now. A little mini victory lap, but yeah, that's how I'm doing.
I did get injured last week. I can't stop sliding in softball games. And I realize as an adult, you got to stop doing these things, particularly when you're wearing shorts and not pants. But you know what? You get in that moment, it comes down to being out or safe. I am going to try to be safe every single time. But enough of that talk. We're going to go through all 16 games. I'm going to list the matchup, spread, and game total. And Andrew and I are going to rotate, giving a fantasy take, and we'll move on to the next one. Obviously, there's still plenty of time throughout the week to more fully form our opinions, but you know, it's a good way. Get familiar with some of the matchups, top fantasy spots, and I'm trying to keep this as evergreen as possible up until Sunday. So, starting off with an electric Thursday night matchup, Dolphins at Jaguars, opened as a pick'em. Jaguars now up to 2.5 point favorites. The over-under is up from 44 to 47.5. I think this is going to be Devontae Parker's 2020 coming out party. He's had a really rough start to the season. He had the Patriots in week one, Tre'Davious White in the Bills in week two. That Bills game was also just pouring down rain for most of it. Amazing Josh Allen was able to do the stuff he did in that weather. But, you know, you look at Parker and he had the mid-game injury in week one, but week two goes ahead and plays 88% of the offensive snaps. Look good out there. Caught 5 of 8 targets, 53 yards, and a score. From what my knowledge, it seems like Ryan Fitzpatrick, still the guy under center, doesn't even appear to have a particularly short leash. I mean, he played well out there last week, 300 plus yards and 2 scores. I know a lot of it was in garbage time, but they seem perfectly content with letting Fitz still be that guy. He's one of the best quarterbacks we've ever seen. Feed Devontae Parker, enable him. He remains the outright number one wide receiver in this offense. You know, credit to Mike Gesicki on the big game last week, but I think this time next week, we're going to be talking about Parker as the rightful top 20 fantasy receiver that he should be ranked as moving forward. Andrew, talking about the Jaguars, and they're, you know, I guess they are home, and then just they, to me, like when I think of Thursday night football, I think of the Jaguars. So even if we didn't get Jaguars Titans, I'm happy that we have the Jaguars on Thursday night football.
Yeah, I'm definitely bummed out that we have the Jaguars Titans flex to a Sunday night, you know, 1 o'clock Eastern time slate. So that was a little bit disappointing. But again, like you mentioned, we got Dolphins Jaguars coming up on Thursday night, and it starts at the quarterback position. I mean, Ian, correct me if I'm wrong, but Minshew just seems like a guy that is going to thrive on Thursday, for a course. He just seems like a guy that's going to do well, and the matchup is shaping up to be that. The Dolphins have not been good against quarterbacks. They got destroyed by Cam Newton. They got destroyed by Josh Allen, and I don't see why Minshew wouldn't continue that trend. He's already been a really great quarterback so far in fantasy. He's been a top 12 guy for the first 2 weeks of the year. You have Byron Jones, who's banged up, so we could finally see DJ Chark, you know, actually have a legitimate game after he's kind of seen middling production for the first 2 weeks. So I absolutely love Gardner Minshew in this matchup. I think that he has the potential to be, you know, a top 10 quarterback this week.
Yes, sir. I do have him ranked as my QB12 on the week. He's been a QB1. You got to start treating him as a QB1. Next up, Texans at Steelers. Steelers opened up as 6-point favorites, but that's down to 4 points. People giving the Texans a little bit more respect after that just hellacious start this season that continues in this spot. Over-under has been steady at 45. I just want people to realize that, like, what David Johnson is doing in this backfield right now, and that's taking the whole damn thing completely over, because Duke Johnson missed the first game of his career last week with his knee injury. You know, we'll see if he's back ready to go in week three or not, but either way, this is the David Johnson show. 95% snaps last week. Now, the touches weren't there. 11 carries, 4 targets, weird game with the Ravens, you know, keeping a lot of that time in possession, just not really letting the Texans get much of anything going. But CJ Precise didn't even have a touch, only 5% snaps, wasn't even involved until very late in the game. So, you know, David Johnson, even when he's been healthy over the last few years, he wasn't breaking that many tackles, but we're seeing him show that elusiveness out there. And even in that game last week, he didn't put the numbers up, but, you know, was a better ball away on a wheel route from having a nice little receiving score on his resume. So we're not seeing the 8 to 10 targets per game that, you know, maybe we'd be hoping for in a different offense, but that's just not the type of quarterback that Deshaun Watson necessarily is. This is a tough spot, but man, oh man, if you're out there and, you know, you don't have these Texans players on your squad, and the owners or the fantasy managers are getting, you know, a little bit impatient about the breakout coming, we got the Steelers game this week, but after that, we get the Vikings, the Jaguars, the Titans, Titans, the Packers, the Jaguars again, and the Browns. And then we're in mid-November, man. So Deshaun Watson and company, they're going to put up points at some point, and David Johnson is a big part of that. He's going to be a borderline RB1, if not higher, I think, from week four on. Andrew, one, thoughts on David Johnson, and am I talking crazy or are you believing in him? And two, hit me with some Steelers info.
Yeah, David Johnson has looked really good for the past couple of weeks, and he's getting a lot of the usage. So, I mean, it's surprising to talk about all the injuries and to see guys like David Johnson and Jordan Reed, you know, make it through week two unscathed. So we're hoping that, hey, hopefully Will Fuller can come back and he can take advantage of that really easy schedule. So maybe they just keep him out. That'd be great. You don't have to play him in a tough matchup anyway. So let's just, you know, hold him aside and play Will Fuller during down the stretch.
Boom.
With the Steelers, so Diontae Johnson is the talk of the town. He's been, you know, leading the Steelers in targets, 21 versus 14, Juju. And those are really the top two guys. I mean, that's all that Ben is really looking for. Obviously, Chase Claypool is making the most out of his limited opportunities. But, I mean, Diontae Johnson, you know, looking back, seeing that he was going in the seventh round of drafts, it just seems like an absolute steal if you were to get him there. And I am going out aggressively trying to target this guy wherever I can because it's going to be too late before you can't ever get him at all in trades. And the matchup against the Houston Texans, I think, is not, it doesn't look that great on paper when you look at, you know, fantasy points against, because the Ravens didn't really impress that well against them last week. But Lamar Jackson only attempted 24 passing attempts. The Steelers throw way more than that. They're north of 35 plus passing attempts per game. And like I mentioned, Big Ben just throws it to Juju and he throws it to Diontae and everyone else kind of just gets the scraps. And you look at the Houston Texans secondary, you got Vernon Hargraves, Bradley Roby, a bunch of guys that aren't going to be able to stop Diontae Johnson. Both those guys, PFF coverage grade outside the top 40. It's just, it's going to be, you know, pants off for Diontae Johnson. I'm sorry.
He had a also had a punt return touchdown nullified by a pretty iffy penalty, in my opinion. I'm always team let the boys play out there. I kind of bark about any penalty, but this one truly was questionable. Diontae made about three or four guys miss on his way to the end zone. So check that one out if you didn't see it live. Moving on, Titans at Vikings. This one opened as a pick 'em. Titans are now favored by 2.5 points. The over-under has moved up from 45.5 to 47. We're talking about Gardner Minshew and how we just got to accept that this guy is the fantasy QB one, that he's been more weeks than not over the last year plus 2 weeks. Ryan Tannehill is the same way. This dude had, by my count, just four of the nicest passes of the week in the entire week too. I mean, it was awesome. He had this one touchdown to Adam Humphries where he just got completely walloped, stood tall in the pocket and put the ball right where it needed to be anyway. And he did it last week without his number one receiver in AJ Brown. So, you know, still more than enough talent to go around this offense. I know they're a run first unit. We saw the pass attempts, you know, go from over 40 in week one back to a more, you know, realistic kind of mid 20 count in that week two game against the Jags. But look, through 2 weeks, Tannehill is PFF's seventh highest graded passer. He's only got a 7.2 yard A dot. I mean, he's not the same sort of downfield gunslinger we saw last year, but he's getting it done. I mean, he's my QB 15 going into this matchup, and DFS particularly, like, don't discount while AJ Brown is out the ability for Tannehill to enable Jonnu Smith, Corey Davis in a condensed target share against a Vikings secondary that just hasn't even looked capable of slowing down anyone to this point. So hopefully AJ Brown gets healthy, but if not, might be a DFS opportunity to stack this passing game this week. Andrew, what you got on the Vikings?
Yeah, the Vikings are not nearly as thrilling to talk about as the Tennessee Titans. It was really disappointing how they played last week. Kirk Cousins was awful, atrocious. He scored negative fantasy points, which is, you know, that's Baker Mayfield territory from last year, negative fantasy points. So it's never, that's not really anything good you want to talk about. But I think that they're in for a bounce back effort, at least enough to support Dalvin Cook and Adam Thielen, because you're not really looking to target. This offense isn't prolific enough to support any of these, you know, Justin Jeffersons or any of these tight ends. So you can't get any action from those guys. But Dalvin Cook and Adam Thielen, expect them to bounce back in a way. Part of the reason is because the Titans don't rush the passer nearly as well as what they saw last week with Kirk Cousins. He was atrocious last week. He got run over by the Colts front. So I expect the Vikings to bounce back.
Yeah, and it's Kirk Cousins and Baker Mayfield, who's now got Kevin Stefanski calling his plays. Same problem from a fantasy perspective, just limited volume. They need to be world beaters with their passing efficiency because there's no rushing floor. It's just not the situations that we should be looking to target in fantasy. All right, Bears at Falcons. We got Atlanta opening up as 3.5 point favorites. That is holding steady. The over-under 48 has dropped to 47.5, but more or less the same as we saw opening up. So I'm a little worried that this game could be bad game script for David Montgomery. If the Bears 0-2 start proves to be a little fraudulent, and we see the Falcons get up early. You know, it's going to be more of a Tariq Cohen, even Cordarrelle Patterson game script for that backfield. But if the Bears can just stay in this one, I think Montgomery can continue to be, you know, pretty much anyone's idea of a weekly, almost upside RB2. This guy's looked great this season. Even last week, I understand I was against the Giants and it went well, but even going back to week one, the dude ripped off several nice runs. He's looked healthy and he's been breaking tackles, and he got just so widely mocked because, you know, all the hype going to last year was we had that one ridiculous graphic comparing him to like Saquon Barkley and Zeke and all these NFL pros. And then we also had just the all-time great PFF tackle breaking metrics from his time at Iowa State. Look, 2019 didn't go well, but we're living in 2020 now, people. And David Montgomery through 2 weeks is 11th among 53 qualified backs in yards after contact per rush. He's 11th in our PFF rushing grade, and he's 8th in missed forced tackles per touch. The guy's looking shifty out there. He had an awesome touchdown catch last week where he cut back across the grain, made a few guys miss. He's looking like the running back we wanted him to be last year. I think people are still kind of holding on their 2019 opinions a little bit too much. If the Bears can play in neutral to positive game script, Montgomery is going to flirt with RB2 production more weeks than not. At 5,700 on DraftKings, I love taking a shot on him this week and hoping that the Bears can stay in this game. Andrew, what you got on the Falcons?
Atlanta Falcons, man. It's a shootout after shootout with this team. I absolutely love it. And that's probably what's going to happen again. They're going to push the ball. Mitchell Trubisky at least shows that he's capable of keeping, you know, his team in the game. And that's part of the reason why Tariq Cohen doesn't get any playing time, because they're not losing by 21 points. So that's what happens when you pay a pass catching running back so much money. But I digress. So Russell Gage, you know, hot waiver wire addition, has seen 20 targets over the past 2 weeks, 80 yards per game, 79% of the snaps out of the slot. The last two teams that the Bears have faced, slot receivers Amendola and Golden Tate, both had 5 receptions. So I think Russell Gage is a really good option for the Falcons. And then speaking of, you know, more of the wide receivers, Julio Jones, again, absolutely atrocious game last week, dropped a surefire touchdown from Russell Gage, you know, who was, you know, looking back at his Mohamed Sanu, trying to mimic him the best he could. But I looked into the data a little bit with Jones, and I looked at the games following games where he had 2 or fewer receptions, and his following stat lines are 8 for 106 and 2, 5 for 98, 7 for 139 and 1, and 6 for 115 yards. So Julio Jones, he's going to bounce back, guys. Don't freak out. If you want to go trade for this guy right now, I would definitely do it. I'd send out offers. People are thinking, hey, Calvin Ridley's the number one. It's Chris Godwin, Mike Evans all over again. Why did I draft Julio Jones in the second round? Go get Julio Jones, because he's going to bounce back.
Yeah, just keep an eye on that injury report. He was looking a little bit gimpy out there, but I agree. We do not see a talent like Julio stay quiet for very long. And yeah, what a dime from Gage. Leads you to the question, you know, was Mohamed Sanu a system quarterback or not during his days with the Falcons? 49ers at Giants. The 49ers opened at 6.5, but we're seeing them go down to 4.5 with the news that Jimmy Garoppolo's looking iffy. You know, they lost Nick Bosa, Solomon Thomas. So league's best defensive line is now all of a sudden down 3 of their top guys, if you include DeForest Buckner, you know, now being a member of the Colts. Not looking great. Not looking great for the San Francisco 49ers, and it's also that way in their backfield. So right now, with Deebo Samuel out, with, you know, Tevin Coleman out, and with Raheem Mostert seemingly out, who's the number one playmaker on this offense? Because I think it is Mr. Jerick McKinnon, who has looked absolutely great this season, and I don't think they are going to be hesitant about using this guy. I mean, McKinnon has already been out there on kick returns. I think if there was concern about keeping him healthy and, you know, limiting his amount of potential injury touches, I mean, kickoffs would not be a situation you would have him on. And all he's done with the offensive snaps he's had is make plays. 6 carries, 101 yards and a score, 3 catches, 20 yards and a score. He had that hilarious, like, 55-yard run on 3rd and 31 to pick it up. And okay, maybe the Jets just didn't see that one coming, and that's inflating things here a little bit. But, you know, you got to have some giddy up to run 55 yards. He doesn't look like a player that just missed the last 2 seasons due to injury. And that's what Kyle Shanahan said throughout training camp about how healthy he looked and what the beat writers were saying. So this is a situation where, okay, I think Jeff Wilson, Andrew Michael Hasty, who they're going to call up, are going to be involved. I don't see, you know, McKinnon playing 80% of the snaps. I think it's going to be closer to 50, but they don't have many receivers if Kittle stays out. So McKinnon's pass down work should already be receiving a nice spike there. And his run game usage certainly has a room to go up to at least double digit carries or so. You know, this week, I do think Mike Davis should be your number one preferred waiver wire claim, but, you know, McKinnon is right there at the number 2 spot. I would prioritize McKinnon over any of these Giants running backs, because at least with McKinnon, we know that we have Kyle Shanahan putting him in positions for success. Andrew, I'm sure you got some thoughts on this Giants backfield.
Yeah, it's a wild Giants backfield. You got Devontae Freeman now in the mix to go along with Deion Lewis and Wayne Gallman. So it's pretty hard to kind of digest to figure out who you want to go after. But Devontae Freeman seems like the option, you know, season long, long term. Again, you look at a guy like Leonard Fournette, you know, the first week that he was on the new team, he didn't really do that much. And then the second week, okay, now he got more involved. So it's a running back position. It's really easy to pick up the playbook. It's not super complicated. Devontae Freeman's been in the NFL for a while right now. So I think that Freeman's the long-term play. I think Deion Lewis is still involved if you need someone to start, you know, this week. If you're 0-2, like you need a guy to play, I think that Deion Lewis is probably your option. Again, he catches passes, which are more valuable than what Wayne Gallman can necessarily offer. So, and again, you're not harping to get the early down running back behind the Giants offensive line. That hasn't been great. But again, like you mentioned, the 49ers are dealing with a bunch of injuries. So we could see a more productive running game from the Giants. So I would order in, you know, Freeman, Lewis, and then Wayne Gallman. But looking at the receivers on the Giants as well, we have more injuries, you know, with Barkley out, with Sterling Shepard probably going to miss as well. Darius Slayton seemingly made a deal with the devil to make sure that other receivers on the Giants get hurt so that he gets more targets, because that's what's going to happen once again. You know, I was fading Slayton this offseason because I figured guys would be back. That was wrong because now the guys are hurt again. So he's going to see, you know, a 20% plus target share once again. And there's no Richard Sherman. We've talked about the other injuries on the 49ers defense. And this defense last week gave up 12 receptions and 120 receiving yards to Chris Hogan and Braxton Berrios. So you need to start Darius Slayton because he offers a ton of upside. And I think that Golden Tate you can start as well. You know, he posted 5 catches, 47 yards on 5 targets last week. And the 49ers have not been good against slot receivers, even though they've given up an average of 8 catches per game to the slot position. So Golden Tate, I think, is a really good value in DFS cash lineups. You know, on DK, 4.5K, I think that's a really good value for a team. I think it's a good deal. You know, the Giants throw at the highest rate of any team. 75% of their calls and plays are passing plays, and they just lost their workhorse running back. So I can't imagine they're like, hey, let's go back to the ground game. Let's pound it. I think they're just going to keep throwing it. And against this, you know, shaky 49ers defense, I feel like we could potentially see a Daniel Jones spike week.
Yeah, no, I like that call a lot, and he is my favorite kind of GPP play at the quarterback position. I think he's priced far too low. This is a potential smash spot. Injuries all over the place with San Francisco, and they got to go back out to the East Coast, man. I mean, I'm assuming they didn't stay out there for the week. I mean, that's just some funky scheduling to send them Jets back home, Giants back home. So unfortunate there, and yeah, I do think, you know, pivoting off of the likely chalky Giants run game that, like, what has been good about that all year in favor of the passing game that we do know actually has some talent is the sharp move. Moving on, Raiders at Patriots. Patriots are sitting clean at 6.5-point favorites. Over under is at 46.5, 47 in some books. So like Josh Jacobs is getting the Joe Mixon kind of fantasy rub where everyone's all mad because he didn't find the end zone. He's not getting as many targets as we know they can handle. But guys, he got 30 freaking touches in the game. All right, this was great. The Raiders competed with the Saints. And that's fantastic because the big problem with the Raiders this year was looking at their schedule. It didn't look like they were going to be competitive in all that many games. And we saw last season, you know, after that week one where Jacobs also looked good, played 70% plus snaps and multiple scores, you know, they lost their next two games by multiple touchdowns. And in those games, Jacobs couldn't even find the field for half of the offensive snaps. So we haven't faced that situation yet. And it looks like with this Raiders team, we might not be facing that situation as often as we did in 2019. So both Mixon and Jacobs, particularly with these injuries, I mean, need to continue to be locked in as RB1s. They're going to find the end zone. It's annoying when they don't. And yeah, these guys could handle more pass game work, but people, you know, potential for 30 plus touches in any given week. There aren't many RBs in the league that have that. Continue to fire these guys up without hesitation in fantasy leagues of all shapes and sizes. Andrew, what you got on Cam VP and the New England Patriots?
Dude, Cam is just carrying every single fantasy team that I have. You just averaging 30 points, you know, over 30 points per game, just scoring touchdowns like a madman. And he just, you know, the schedule is now shaping up to be even better. He's got a lot of plus matchups coming up. So if you have Cam, like, you are all set to go. And I like his receivers a lot in this spot. Harry and Edelman, you know, they're very condensed in the target share without a tight end of consequence, without James White as a running back, you know, catching passes. It's really been the Harry and Edelman show. And then when Cam has to drop back, you know, 40 times a game, you know, Demir Byrd gets involved. So, and that's the thing with the running backs. It's trying to figure out which one of these running backs could smash, because the Raiders are not good against the running back position. They've been beat up against that position, you know, through 2 weeks of the NFL season. Last night, we saw them get basically wrecked by Alvin Kamara in the passing game. So you would think, okay, James White, you know, he would be a plug and play here guy if he's available. And I think that's a good, I think that's a good spot. I think James White could be productive in this matchup because of the fact that the Raiders have allowed the second most fantasy points to the running back position, which is stemming from receiving, allowed the most receiving yards and fourth most receptions to the running back so far this year. So I think that James White's a really good play. Obviously, we need to figure out if he is going to be available based on him being inactive last week. But I can only imagine that Bill Belichick and the team would have something schemed up because I think that they were going into the Sunday night game against Seattle with something in mind for the pass-catching game because Sony Michel barely played. They almost knew going in, hey, we're going to be playing from behind. We're not going to try to run the ball with Michel. Like, let's just focus on using James White. But obviously, you know, at the last minute, he was inactive, and Burke had got the involvement in the passing game. So I think that James White's a really good spot here, and I think that if you're desperate, you can roll out Michel, hope he finds the end zone, because they should be playing with a positive game script. But I don't feel great about it.
Yeah, Cam Newton has 5 of the Patriots' 6 carries inside the 5-yard line this year. He owns the NFL record with 14 rushing touchdowns from a quarterback set in his rookie season. He's got 4 through 2 weeks. Might be coming for in the year 2020. I absolutely love it. Moving on, Bengals at Eagles. The Eagles open up as 5.5-point favorites. That's up to 6.5, over under 45.5 up to 46.5. You know, just kind of mentioned this with, you know, my little rant on Josh Jacobs, fantasy investors acting a little spoiled lately, but I think it's the same thing with Joe Mixon. And, you know, every week I send out a tweet that lists the running backs that play at least 70% of their offensive snaps in the previous game, get an idea of who, you know, the real workhorses are. Joe Mixon is almost never on that list. He hasn't been on that list for the better part of the last 2+ seasons, and people are continuously shocked when he's not on that list because Giovanni Bernard has been souping up, you know, 30-40% snaps and some targets for the better part of the last decade. So, you know, Joe Mixon, again, the guy had 20 touches in a completely awful game script. I understand the Bengals aren't going to be a team leading all that often this season, but at the same time, he's Joe Mixon. He's been a borderline RB1 the last 2 years. That's what he's going to be when it's all said and done in 2020. It's not like Giovanni Bernard is going to like take his job away. They paid the guy. It's Joe Mixon. He's fine. Continue to treat him as an RB1. You know, I sent out a start sit tweet for the next podcast, and people are kind of asking me like, Joe Mixon or James Robinson? People, Joe Mixon is not leaving the starting lineup. Not even if there's a fire. Keep him in there. He's going to score touchdowns. There'll be better days. Be patient. All right, that's out of my system. Andrew, what you got in the Eagles?
Dude, the Eagles, I think it's a D-Jax game. I'm going to say it right now. DeJon Jackson has improved. You know, over week 1 to week 2, he had more targets, more receiving yards, more catches. And I don't think enough buzz is being talked about him because he really hasn't hit that big game. He's kind of had modest production, which is unusual for him because he's such a home run hitter. But you look at his production over the first 2 weeks of the season, he ranks 6th in total air yards and it's 6th in targets of 20 or more yards downfield. Again, great indicators of future fantasy success. And the Eagles have a much easier matchup this week against the Cincinnati Bengals. They are not, you know, playing a juggernaut pass rush where Carson Wentz is going to have zero time to throw the ball. They actually have time to let plays develop downfield. And over the last 2 weeks, the Bengals have allowed 7 passing targets of 20 yards or more, 125-point, you know, passer rating on throws ranked 7th highest in the NFL. So again, part of that reason is because the Bengals can't generate a lot of pressure up front. So quarterbacks can drop back, read and let plays develop down the field. So I think that it's going to be a DeSean Jackson week. After all, you know, Wentz has targeted him 15 times over the last 2 weeks with a team leading 9 in week 2.
Wentz has been one of the worst quarterbacks just in the league these first 2 weeks of the season. I do not see that happening for all 16 games, and I am with you. If he's going to bust out, it will be with DeSean Jackson. A quick shout out to our sponsors at Monkey Knife Fight before we continue on. All first-time depositors at Monkey Knife Fight that put at least $20 in their accounts while using promo code PFF will receive a free PFF Edge annual subscription. You can get my rankings, Andrew's rankings, all the stuff behind a good paywall there. $40 value for just $20. And you'll get the opportunity to turn that $20 into even more money playing daily fantasy and prop games at one of the fastest growing fantasy sports sites in the USA and Monkey Knife Fight. So go to Monkey Knife Fight, deposit your $20 with promo code PFF, and you'll receive your free PFF Edge annual subscription. Moving on to the Washington football team at the Cleveland Browns. We got the Brownies opened up as 5.5-point favorites, up to full 7 points, over under 45.5, down to 44. Andrew, happy Antonio Gibson season, man, because I think it's time. We can treat this dude as an RB2, I think, moving forward. Now, maybe the production's going to be a little sporadic. We are talking about the Washington offense, and, you know, they're facing a pretty good Browns D-line that, you know, Mixon was able to break some tackles with in his opportunities, but, you know, maybe not the most ideal game for a true breakout. But, look, last week he played 67% of the offensive snaps, led the way with 13 carries, also had the backfields only two targets. Peyton Barber was on the field for only one carry. He's seemingly out of the picture. Maybe they activate Bryce Love. He's still sitting there in the wings, but McKissick went down. Dude, I mean, I wouldn't even be shocked if McKissick's snap rate shrinks in a similar manner as Barber. He's just not giving them much right now. Gibson's the guy. And guess what? They're using him as this pass down back. And because of that, it's fantastic because he's also getting the most carries. So no matter what the game script is, he should be fine. You know, we're looking at double digit carries per week. I think these targets are going to settle in closer to 5 or 6 than the 2 or 3 we've seen so far. And right now, through 2 weeks, Gibson is the NFL's leader in forced missed tackles per touch. Guys already making a ton of dudes miss. You know, I know fantasy analysts out there hate the broken tackle stats. And, you know, okay, I know you don't get fantasy points for, you know, breaking tackles, but they are one of the best pieces of data we have for just on field, one-on-one, who's a beast and who's not performing. So when we're, you know, trying to project how someone's going to do with enhanced opportunities, I like seeing people that have, you know, been able to break a lot of tackles. It's why I was high on AJ Brown going in this season. It's why I was high on Deontay Johnson too. And at least that one seems to be working out a little bit so far. So, you know, broken tackles, I do like to follow them when they're going alongside a volume increase. That is the case with Antonio Gibson. If the manager in your league that has Gibson doesn't quite realize this spike in usage, get him now, because I think by this time next week, worst case, week 4, we're going to be talking about him as a locked in top 20 back almost every single week. Andrew, what you got in the Browns?
Antonio Gibson, certified beast. So yes. The Cleveland Browns, going to talk about Odell Beckham, very polarizing player, not just in the NFL, but, you know, among all football things and all professional athletes. So he had a bounce back game last week. You know, he able to score a touchdown, and as fantasy owners were freaking out because he couldn't put up points against the Baltimore Ravens, who, you know, basically hold a lot of receivers to no fantasy points. So, but I digress. So the Washington football team has allowed the second highest deep pass percentage, just over 30% to wide receivers lined up on the outside. Odell Beckham Jr. ranks 13th in total air yards and has a total of 5 deep passing targets when you account for plays negated by penalties, which is more than any other Browns players combined. So OBJ is the main deep threat, and Washington football team has faced a lot of deep passes from outside receivers. Then you factor in the fact that the Browns like to use play action with Kevin Stefanski. Washington's defense has faced the 8th most play action plays this year. And OBJ has been the highest targeted player on those play action throws. And his average depth of target from Baker Mayfield on those throws has been 2nd only to Josh Allen, of the highest in the NFL. So I think that the Browns are going to use play action, try to slow down this Washington defensive front, and it's going to result in some big plays from OBJ.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to need the big plays, and it's good that his, you know, A-dot is where it is, because this is what Stephon Diggs needed to do last year to maintain his fantasy value in that run-first Stefanski/Kubiak offense. So far, it seems like OBJ is pigeonholed for that Diggs role, so a little worried about Jarvis Landry, but yeah, it does look at least a little better this week than it did after week 1 for OBJ stands moving forward. We got the Los Angeles Rams traveling to Buffalo to take on the Bills. Bills open as 3-point favorites, down to 2.5, over under 44. And a half is up to 47.5. So with the Rams, I want to talk about this backfield, because Cam Akers, dealing with a rib injury, was limited just 3 snaps before leaving for the remainder of the game. All right, Sean McVay, touche. I thought he was lying when he said they have 3 running backs in the offseason, and because, you know, his entire coaching career with the Rams, he's leaned on one guy. Well, you know, week 1, Malcolm Brown was that guy, leaned on, got the majority of touches and snaps. Still got the majority of snaps in week 2, but they did go ahead and give Henderson 42% snaps as well. He led the way with 12 carries. Brown only had 11, and then Henderson got the backfield's only 3 targets, and he looked pretty good doing so. I mean, he busted a nice run, showed some real burst. He looked plenty healthy, and that was the issue after week 1. McVay noting that Henderson wasn't healthy, but as he gets better, he'll be the guy moving forward. You know, Akers has the rib injury, and we got Brown playing through a fractured left pinky. It sounds like he's going to play through it. I think he's going to get, you know, his usual double-digit carries per game, but wouldn't be shocked at all if Henderson becomes the primary pass-down back And if we can get word that Akers is out, we have shrunk the, you know, volatile three-back committee to a more fantasy-friendly two-back committee. And I think that could really work this week. So I'm still, you know, kind of pessimistic on either Brown or Henderson truly breaking out of this backfield. But just in terms of a week three start, I think Henderson, you know, deserves to be up there in any sort of, you know, waiver claim scenario. So it's, you know, been a pleasantly, I think a pleasant surprise with how well the Rams have been able to put up points as a whole. They're definitely turned to more of a run first offense, at least in week three. It looks like Henderson will be the guy to benefit the most from that. Andrew, who you got on the Bills, and why is it just talking about how Josh Allen is a god amongst men?
Yeah, Josh Allen, man, he is a god amongst men. But before we go to the Bills, I just want to make a comment about Darrell Henderson. I think that as well, he had a goal line carry in his game when Malcolm Brown was out, and he looked good. You know, he converted his one carry inside the 5-yard line. He actually broke two tackles on it and scored a touchdown. So he looked good at the goal line. So I think it's impressive to the coaches that he at least showed, hey, if Malcolm Brown, you know, what if he has some issues with ball handling? You know, he has a hand injury. He has an injury to his pinky. Again, I'm not here analyzing how, you know, football players hold the ball, but if you have something wrong with your hand, that could, you know, negatively impact how you carry the ball. So if something like that happens in the game, something re-injured, Darrell Henderson would become the goal line back as well. So you could combine that. So I think, again, I agree with you. He has the most upside out of, you know, a lot of these running backs you get off the waiver wire. But, you know, we're talking about Darrell Henderson. He is no god. Josh Allen is a god. And I'm going to just highlight his deep ball accuracy and passing attempts right now. So ranks number one in the league in deep ball completion, second in deep ball yards, and fourth in deep ball passer rating through the first 2 weeks of the season. But now he's met with a challenge because the Rams defense has allowed just one deep ball completion since the start of the season. So he's definitely facing a much tougher defense. Again, this isn't a, hey, don't play Josh Allen because it doesn't matter what he does with his arm necessarily. He's going to be able to make plays, whatever, make up with it with his legs. But I think you may need to temper expectations a little bit for wide receiver Stephon Diggs and maybe look for an alternative to John Brown. Brown has caught two touchdowns over the last 2 weeks, and the Rams are just one of four teams this season to yet to allow a touchdown to the wide receiver position. Cornerback Jalen Ramsey hasn't been traveling into the slot at all this year so far, and that's where Diggs has seen at least half of his targets. So I don't think this is a shy away from Diggs because, hey, he can move into the slot and he can just take one up the seam and then you're golden. But Brown, who mostly plays on the outside, I think is going to see a lot more Ramsey, so I think I'd be trying to lean away from him.
Yeah, man, I cannot get over just how good Stephon Diggs looks. And, you know, I was kind of late coming around to him in this offseason, but the more I thought about, you know, Smokey Brown being the PPR wide receiver 20 last season, and, you know, Diggs just by all accounts being the better overall talent, as good as Smokey is in his own right, definitely someone that we probably as an industry should have been a little bit higher on. All right, moving on to the Jets at the Colts. Colts opened up as 7-point favorites. That has spiked up to 10.5. Over-under has dropped from 45 to 43. 3.5. Man, this Jets offense, I'll try to keep it brief. Pretty much, if you're a slot receiver, maybe you can get some fantasy production. Otherwise, unless your quarterback is Peyton Manning, you're not going to do much with Adam Gase as your head coach. Crowder 8 in week 1. Braxton Berrios 8 in, you know, week 2. I mean, Darnold, the touchdown he had to Berrios, which happened like with like a minute left in the fourth quarter, was like such a ridiculously good play by Darnold. And you see these flashes kind of once, sometimes twice a week if he's really got it going. But they're just so few and far between. But it's a shame, you know. I mean, a lot of smart people were so high on Darnold coming out. And, you know, whether or not he can eventually become, you know, the next latest and greatest post-Gase success story remains to be seen. I will not be fully giving up on Darnold until I see him play away from this Gase offense and with any semblance of pass catchers, because they're just not doing anything for him right now. And with all these receivers injuries, with Bell out, you got Chris Herndon, who was just the talk of training camp. You guys know that because I wouldn't shut up about him for the better part of the month of August. And he's out there blocking on 36% of his passing snaps, which is a league high mark amongst starting tight ends per weekly friend of the show, almost, Dwayne McFarland, PFF Zone. Make sure you check out his utilization report on Wednesday. Always great stuff in there. So yeah, I mean, we have a situation where the Jets were more willing to feed pretty much a guy coming up out of nowhere in Berrios, and then Chris Hogan, who's been on the team for what, 2 or 3 months, over the guy that, you know, seemed like the next big thing at the tight end position as recently as 2018. I'm not bitter, you know, it's whatever. I'm not mad at all. I haven't lost hours of sleep over this. It's all good, everyone. I'm not mad. You're mad. Oh my gosh, that's enough talk about the Jets. Andrew, let's lighten things up with some talk on Jonathan Taylor and the Colts.
Yeah, I think Sam Darnold just goes home after, you know, every game and just watches Ryan Tannehill highlights, just so he knows, hey, There's always a hope, man.
It can happen. It can happen.
Always got
Sam.
A shot. All right, so the Colts are without Paris Campbell, and that really sucks because Paris Campbell was a lot of, we were high on him. We had him as a sleeper over at PFF. A lot of people had him as a sleeper, so it's really disappointing to see him, banged out for the rest of the season. That's going to open up opportunities for Zach Pascal, potentially. He's the guy that took over in the slot. He caught a touchdown. He saw an 80% snap share from the slot. But I think it's noteworthy as well that Hilton has seen a decent amount of action from the slot as well. 5 targets, 40% target rate on routes run, and an average depth of target of 15.8 from the slot. So I do think that with this Jets secondary that's not very good, that it could be T.Y. Hilton and Phillip Rivers that kind of finally connect on some of these deep shots, whether it's T.Y. lining up in the slot and kind of going deep. So I think that, again, they're going to probably mix some guys in there, and they could even mix in Mo Alie-Cox because Jordan Reed absolutely ate out of the slot. He caught both of his touchdowns against the Jets in the slot. So I think that, paying attention and figuring out, okay, who's that guy going to be in the slot for the Colts, I think it's going to pay off.
Yeah, if Jack Doyle stays sideline, maybe Mo Alie-Cox can keep doing his thing. But otherwise, I think T.Y. Hilton's going to be the only consistent, fantasy viable guy in this passing game now that Paris Campbell is unfortunately on IR and out indefinitely. Moving on, we got the Carolina Panthers traveling to L.A. to take on the Chargers. Chargers opened up 6.5-point favorites, up to 7, over under 44 is down to 43.5. Christian McCaffrey out 4 to 6 weeks with this high ankle sprain. Certainly sucks. Fantasy investors, just fans of the game, always more fun to watch McCaffrey out there. Looking like it could be something resembling the Mike Davis show. And I'm going on record with him as my preferred number one waiver wire pickup this week. I've never been a believer in spending, 50% plus fab on anyone. But if you are going to splurge on someone, I think it should be Davis because, we mentioned that Giants situation and how that's more than likely, at least this week and probably moving forward, going to be a committee of sorts. At a minimum, Deion Lewis is siphoning away pass down work from whoever among Gallman or Freeman gets that early down work. We know San Francisco could be a committee. Mostert doesn't even seem to be out all that long. We'll see what McKinnon can give us in the meantime. Mike Davis, I think is the only guy in these backfields that has a real chance to have a three down role for the better part of the next month. And, you look at what he did last week, 8 catches, caught all 8 of his targets for 74 yards. He can be the pass down guy. And, Reggie Bonifant, I don't think it's a situation where Davis is being treated as, the scat back. It's not a Deion Lewis situation where they're saving Bonifant potentially to come in and be the early down guy. Davis won that job in training camp. Matt Rhule talked him up as one of the best players in training camp, and it's been nothing but good things since. So Bonifant will be active. Again, if I had to project the snap splits, I don't think Davis is going to take that McCaffrey role. He's not McCaffrey. Few people are McCaffrey. We shouldn't expect him to get that role. But, Bonifant, 20-30% snaps. Curtis Samuel is going to chip in and get a handful of running back snaps. It should be more than a handful, but that's a story for another day. And I think Davis, we're looking at him having 50-60% snaps, and it could just be a lot more. Maybe they do put him in that McCaffrey role. If anyone's going to get it, it's him. He seems to have the pass down work. I think out of all these running backs that you're going to want on the waiver wire, Mike Davis can give you the highest upside over the next 4 weeks. Andrew, do you agree that Mike Davis should be the number one waiver priority? And after that, hit me with the Chargers.
No, I do not agree that Mike Davis should be the number one waiver wire priority. I get the opportunity should be there for him, but I'm just not sure Mike Davis is good. That's the only thing with him. We saw him flash last year with the Bears. He came out week one, played ahead of Montgomery, played ahead of Tariq Cohen, and then he just kind of fell off the face of the earth. And I wasn't really sure what happened after. And he did kind of the same thing in Seattle. He produced, and then he kind of fell off again. So I'm just concerned if he comes out in week three and doesn't play well. Okay, well, what do we have now? So I'm going after more upside guys, in my opinion. I think Daryl Henderson just plays in a better offense. So that's kind of, where I'm leaning. But
okay, hold on. That's fair. I thought Henderson wasn't even really on the radar. I thought he was owned in most leagues. If you want to go Henderson, particularly week three, absolutely. If you're able, you're just looking for the 1 week fill-in. I will say I like Mike Davis's highlights at Seattle, so I'm not going to let you off hook that easily. I do think that at least the Panthers think he's good. But yes, okay. So we can at least agree on that you should not be spending, 50% plus fab on any of these guys for the most part, because there's uncertainty for everyone, even if Davis might have the higher ceiling. So good talk. Now hit me with the Chargers.
So if this guy's available, I think that he probably deserves the most is Joshua Kelly. So I know that he's probably available in some home leagues here and there, but you look at his usage over the last 2 weeks, he's seeing the majority of touches and carries. He's seeing all of the goal line work, 6-1 in terms of carries inside the 10-yard line compared to Austin Eckler. And If you have Austin Eckler, I would be trying to move him, honestly, because Joshua Kelly's not going away, and you have Tyrod Taylor potentially coming back, and we saw him not target the running back position at all. We saw Justin Herbert target the running back position. So there's a lot of moving pieces, and it just seems like you may be better off trading Austin Eckler now. He's got a really good matchup against the Panthers. You can kind of use that as a selling point where you're talking about, hey, because I know a lot of people will try to trade them after the great matchup, but that usually doesn't work because people are smart enough to realize, oh, he just played a really good team and now he has a really bad matchup, so I don't want this player anymore. And there's a chance in this game where, I mean, Joshua Kelly could go out, score two touchdowns, have 100 rushing yards, and then you're left with Austin Eckler, who doesn't score as many fantasy points in this game, because let's say the Chargers are up. I mean, they're favored, so that could be a real concern for Austin Eckler owners, because your trade window may just bottom out if Joshua Kelly outscores Austin Eckler this week.
It's a great spot for both backs. I mean, I think the, okay, I'm not expecting Eckler to provide, you know, consistent RB1 value necessarily moving forward. They're just not using him enough as a pure receiver. They've cut his snap rate and slot out wide in half. But I would just say, before we go all in on Kelly, and hey, he's looked great, I think he's earned this role, but let's just remember Justin Jackson has been out with that quad injury. You know, I, you know, would limit the exposure, particularly in DFS, if Justin Jackson gets back. Jackson's been really good for them over the years. I just wouldn't be shocked if they give him some of that early down work he was getting in week one. But yeah, again, for week three only, you know, Kelly's another guy with Henderson I just wasn't really considering as much because I think he's owned in most leagues already. But I love pivoting off of Mike Davis in DFS tournaments at 5,100 in favor of Kelly at 5,000. Maybe the ownership on Kelly will be higher than I'm expecting, but I think that could be the GPP play there. All right, now we have the Cowboys at the Seahawks. Over-under is holding steady at a just huge 55.5 points. Seahawks open 3.5, now up to 4.5. This Cowboys passing game, I mean, you know, I watched that entire game, you know, live in week two, and I must say, I really never thought the Cowboys were out of it. I think that's the amount of respect I have for, you know, Dak and just this team in general. They can put up points with the best of them, and yeah, they have these stretches where they put the ball on the ground four times in the first 11 minutes of that game. I mean, just incompetency, just that shouldn't be happening from an offense that good at times. Two bundled fake punts, like, what is going on? Found a way to win it, and we're seeing what happens when you have Dak and this bad defense and a pass-happy offense to go along with it, and it's mostly fantasy goodness. I mean, through 2 weeks, Amari Cooper, 23 targets, CeeDee Lamb's there at 15, Dalton Schultz is all the way up at 14 randomly, Zeke's at 11 without old man Witten taking the underneath stuff, and Michael Gallup sitting down there at 10, but they've been up more of the fantasy-friendly variety. So I think Gallup's going to, you know, gain on Lamb a little bit with those numbers, but maybe not this week, man, because again, we're just breaking down the cornerback matchups, and CeeDee Lamb has the best spot from the cozy confines of the slot against the Seattle defense that, you know, Quentin Dunbar and Griffin on the outside, two of the league's better corners. I mean, per PFF last year, those were top 15 corners. We saw Dunbar with that great pick on Sunday night. I love Jamal Adams. I've been, you know, team Jamal Adams, number one safety in the league, but let's face it, you know, he struggled when trying to guard Edelman in the slot in that game. I think you put CeeDee out there and try to do the same thing, it could be the same result. So CeeDee Lamb, another good matchup. He's, you know, truly, if you're not already treating him as, you know, an upside wide receiver three, you should be. And he's just slowly but surely starting to approach that, you know, top 30 status. So we'll see where the rankings end up falling. I haven't finalized mine just yet, but CeeDee Lamb quickly rising up the ranks. Andrew, what's up with Russ and the Seahawks?
Yeah, I mean, there's really not much to say. You know, they are really good. I guess we'll start with that. I know you mentioned that DK Metcalf is basically untouchable. You can't bench this guy. It doesn't matter. He's matchup proof, I think is what you said.
Correct.
So Metcalf, Lockett, you know, they're in your lineups. There's really nothing really discussed there. And it doesn't even matter how much they pass because Russell Wilson is just so efficient. It doesn't matter if they throw 18 times a game or 40 times a game. It just doesn't really matter because there's a way that they just, you know, are going to produce. But I will say for this game in particular, if you're looking at it from a DFS standpoint, I think that Chris Carson maybe is overlooked potentially, just looking at the fact that people want to stack all of the receivers. And we saw last week that didn't really work. You know, we saw Dak Prescott score three of the touchdowns. So you were kind of left dead in the water sometimes if you had Gallup or Lamb, because then there was no touchdowns between those guys. It was Schultz that caught the only touchdown from Dak Prescott. So And Chris Carson actually leads the team in touchdown receptions, which is, you know, kind of crazy to even kind of bring up. But he's really being heavily involved in the passing game. He has 9 targets, which ranks 3rd on the team, and he ranks 4th in total routes run. He's only behind those 2 star receivers and Greg Olsen. So I think Chris Carson is definitely potentially going to be the underrated player in this matchup from a DFS perspective. And I think also, you know, the Cowboys have actually faced teams that have run the ball on them a lot. They've faced teams that throw at the 6th lowest rate, 53%. So again, any invitation to run the ball is usually a invitation that Pete Carroll's probably going to accept. So I'm going to be looking at Carson as a potential pivot off some of these more chalky receivers.
Yeah, in week 1, we saw DJ Dallas is inactive, so check mark, you know, the Chris Carson pass down box. And in week 2, we saw that, you know, the really kind of close carry split in week 1, probably more of an anomaly. You know, check that box as lead early down back. Chris Carson, RB1 moving forward, absolutely. All right, we got the Lions visiting the Cardinals. Arizona opened up as 3.5-point favorites. That's gone up to 5.5. The over-under's up from 51 to 54.5. So this Lions offense, which was so fun last year, and, you know, to their credit, they're a drop ball away from being 1-1. But it's just not the same unit, man. It makes sense if it's because Kenny Galladay's been out with his hamstring injury. He's tentatively expected to be back this week. But Stafford went from having a league-high 19.2% deep ball rate. That's, you know, passes thrown 20-plus yards downfield per attempts. And in 2020, he's now at 10.7%, nearly half, sinking down to 16th in the league. This is why Stafford was all of a sudden this really high-end fantasy quarterback last year. He had a gunslinger mentality, bad defense, shootout after shootout thrown to his ball or outside wide receivers. But you take away Galladay, it's changed the entire demeanor of this offense, and we're just not seeing the same upside. So maybe if we had Patricia and, you know, the offensive staff out there going out and, you know, really enabling their other options, we could have confidence in a bounce back spot. But, you know, when TJ Hockenson has caught all 9 targets thrown to him for 118 yards and a score, yet the dude's playing 69% snaps while Jesse James is siphoning away 51%. I just don't understand it, man. He's clearly their, if not their best receiver, their number 2 behind Marvin. He's looked like their best player, honestly, at times over the past, you know, season plus 2 games, particularly in 2020. So it's a shame with Hockenson. He's one of the more talented young tight ends in the league, and this should be a situation where he can get more targets. But guess what, man? Like, they're not going to go up once Galladay comes back. If anything, it's going to be even rougher. So unfortunate, you know, not the first time we've seen Stafford not able to enable, you know, a fantasy-friendly tight end. You go back to the Eric Ebron days, but, you know, it's just unfortunate. I know a lot of people predicting the year 2 Hockenson breakout. I think his talent's ready for it. We'll see if they can get him the volume in the future, but it's not looking good now. Andrew, what's up with Kyler Murray and company?
Dude, but it's TJ Hockenson versus the Arizona Cardinals. This was the breakout game last year. This has to be it.
He's going to have an awesome 4 or 5 targets probably. I wish it was 10.
We can only dream. Hopefully Matt Patricia will listen to the podcast. So when it comes to the Cardinals, you've obviously got Kyler Murray, who's just lighting up the world with his legs. And this was something Cliff Kingsbury talked about in the offseason. He was like, hey, when Kyler runs, our offense is way better. And that's exactly what they've been doing the past 2 weeks. So they've been winning games. And so I expect Kyler Murray to keep on running. And that's kind of at a detriment of Kenyon Drake, because Drake's not seeing and scoring touchdowns because Kyler Murray's taking them all away. So that was one of my concerns about Drake moving forward with Kyler Murray. And it's also kind of like bring in the Cam Newton factor with some of the Patriots running backs with those mobile quarterbacks. But the one receiver I want to talk about is Christian Kirk, who got more involved in week 2, you know, after seeing basically 1 catch for 0 yards in the first game. But again, he's running a lot of routes. He's playing in this high-powered offense, and he's their deep threat. He's been the guy that's been seeing all the downfield targets. So in week 2, he converted 4 of his targets into 2 receptions for 57 yards. He now ranks 3rd in the NFL in total targets of 20 or more yards downfield. And he gets the juiciest matchup against this beat-up Lions secondary, who's allowed the most deep passing attempts of over 20 yards this season. So I love Christian Kirk in tournaments this week for DFS, and I think he's a great buy-low candidate. Again, this is a really high-powered offense. They've run so many plays, and Christian Kirk is the only way you can get any piece of this offense that's really, really cheap.
Yeah, Kirk and shout-out Andy Isabella each had nice long receptions off. Perfectly placed deep balls from Kyler. Very fun offense to watch this season. We got 3 more matchups. Want to give a quick shout-out to our sponsor, Underdog Fantasy, though, before we get on to those. If you like fantasy football, you need to be playing on Underdog Fantasy. It's my favorite new fantasy football app. Awesome for best ball and continuing to be so through the season. Website and app are super slick and by far the best experience out there. Do snake draft games for real money every week. You draft a new team every week and get a shot at big prizes. No lineups setting, waiver wires were bad trades to deal with. It's DFS, people. It is fantastic. The team that built the app is top-notch. Customer support is best in the game. Constantly updating and adding new features. Look up Underdog Fantasy on your app store or go to underdogfantasy.com to play today. Make sure make your first deposit and don't forget to use code PFF after you do. Let them know that I sent you. All right, Buccaneers at Broncos. Tampa Bay up to -6 after opening as 3.5-point favorites. Over-unders of 40.5 is down to 44.5 open down to 43. Talking this Tampa Bay backfield, though, it was the Leonard Fournette show in week two, which, you know, naturally after Bruce Arians said that nothing was really going to change, we did see a change a little bit, but that's just life in this backfield and, you know, staying true to his character. Arians has gone out and said again that he does not plan on shuffling his RB rotation, and I don't think he's lying. I think this is pretty much what we're going to see here until he just gets the David Johnson-esque talent that he thinks he just never has to take off the field. But I don't think that's how they view Fournette. I don't think that's how they view Rojo or McCoy. I think we're pretty much looking at a mere replica of 2019, except Shady might play a little bit less than Dari did, which is fine because this offense is moving the ball well. They're more down to lean on the run game. You know, we saw that last week against the Panthers, just horrific run defense. Fournette, you know, really helped put that game away at the end. But you know, I can't trust either of these guys as top 20 options yet, because we just have an entire season of evidence last year that as good as one guy can look one week, it can go the other way the next. We have that evidence in this year. Ronald Jones looked like the better running back in week one, and then Fournette looked like the better running back in week two. I don't think we can assume that Fournette's necessarily going to be the guy, consistent guy moving forward. You know, 10 to 15 touches per week inside of a Tom Brady led offense, there are certainly worse fantasy roles. I'm just hesitant in assuming that either Fournette or Rojo has that sort of workload already. You know, in season long, I get it. You probably got to throw these guys out there in the flex spot at this point. But, you know, in DFS, seeing Fournette at 6,200 and Rojo at 5,000 after just one week of this, miss me with that. What you got on the Broncos?
Yeah, the Broncos don't have many guys left. To be honest, we lost Drew Locke. We lost Cortland Sutton, who was one of my guys entering the year, so that one really sucked to see, getting the notification that he was officially put on injured reserve, which is just really unfortunate. But we got to move on, and I think that this Broncos offense has a chance to actually be kind of exciting in a weird kind of way. You have Jeff Driskel, who is a guy who can make plays off script, which is something we really like for fantasy football because he can move a little bit. And I think that we're going to see him air the ball out, because what else does he have to do besides, you know, they got to win games, but he wants to, you know, he might have a little D-gaff to him. And the reason I say that is because when Pat Shurmur came in as the offensive coordinator, I projected that the Broncos would throw more downfield. We saw that a lot in the first 2 weeks. I mean, just last week alone, they had three receivers rank inside the top 17 players in total air yards. They had three guys with over 100 air yards. Cortland Sutton, who was in and out of the lineup because he was getting hurt in the entire game. Jerry Jeudy and rookie Jerry Jeudy and rookie KJ Hamler. So we had a bunch of rookies already seeing a ton of action, you know, air balls all over the field. And you also had Tim Patrick and Cortland Sutton both see three targets of over 20 more yards. So I think that this team is going to try to stay competitive by just being aggressive downfield. And I think that KJ Hamler is someone that's really interesting to me kind of moving forward because of the way that he is that speed threat. Like, that's his game, is being a vertical threat. And he was really showing up at training camp before he got hurt with a hamstring injury. So obviously people are going to be harping to Jeudy this week because Sutton is out, but I don't love the matchup if he's going to be lining up in the slot. The Bucs have been really good against slot receivers the first 2 weeks of the year. You know, Emmanuel Sanders and Curtis Samuel basically combined for four catches against them, whereas last week we saw DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson do a ton of damage from the outside. So I think that, you know, if they move Hamler outside more, even though that's different from what he was in college, I mean, he only played 50% of the snaps from the slot in week two. So it's going to shake out how it's going to shake out. But I think that this Broncos receiving core has a little bit more upside, and Noah Fant is just going to be the guy that eats the most.
Yeah, Driskel joins Matthew Stafford and, you know, everyone's favorite fantasy QB, Jameis Winston, only guys with a 10-plus yard average target depth over the past two seasons. He's not your typical, you know, dink and dunk quarterback. I think these guys, are, you know, these receivers, as you said, Jeudy and Hamler, are going to be able to, you know, put up as much, if not more, fantasy production than they might have had with Drew Locke under there. So not expecting the Broncos to become this, you know, rollover and quit type team anytime soon. All right, Sunday Night Football, we got the Green Bay Packers at the New Orleans Saints. Saints have opened at 6.5 down to 3.5. Wouldn't be shocked if that sinks even further as the week progresses. The over-under is down a hair from 52 to 51.5. Look, I mean, this Packers passing game last week wasn't quite as good as week one. I think we had higher expectations facing that banged up Lions secondary, but Rodgers just continues to look as good as ever. And I mean, look, the Packers are one of only seven teams with at least six drops through 2 weeks. MVS has had a couple really big ones. Both of Rodgers' tight ends dropped. I think Tanyan dropped a touchdown. Sternberger dropped one that could have been 20-plus yards. So he's not getting a ton of help from guys not named Davante Adams, and it doesn't matter. And the reason why people like myself were down on Rodgers as a fantasy quarterback this year was because we hadn't seen the 2010 to 2014, a little bit 2015, just world beater in efficiency return. I mean, this guy, last 5 years, has averaged 8.1 adjusted yards per attempt after pretty much breaking records, averaging, you know, 9, even 10 adjusted yards per attempt one season. Just ridiculous. He's at 9.8 this year, even though they didn't change anything in the coaching staff. They didn't add any receivers. Aaron Rodgers has just taken this revenge FU storyline from the whole Jordan Love thing and running with it. So I guess maybe he's going to do this for the entire season. Now, I think we'll see a little bit of regression. I don't think the Saints defense is quite as bad as they look, you know, against the Raiders on Monday night. Still a defense with plenty of talent, you know, at all three levels of the field. But, you know, Rodgers, he's playing like he played 5 to 10 years ago. It's absolutely wild to see, but you know, hats off to him. He's doing his thing, and while he continues doing it, we got to take long looks at MVS and Allen Lazard as weekly higher upside, you know, wide receiver 3, wide receiver 4 options, particularly if this Davante Adams hamstring injury ends up being an issue. But it sounds like he'll luckily be out there. Andrew, what's up with the Saints?
Yeah, it's the Tre'Quan Smith show. He really impressed on Monday Night Football, and I like the way that he was used. He was basically playing the Michael Thomas role, playing that X receiver, because you looked at his A-dot. You know, he's been traditionally a deep threat player where basically it was, hey, if Ted Ginn is out, you can play Tre'Quan Smith. He's going to, you know, be that deep threat guy. But right now, I mean, you don't want to be the deep threat guy for Drew Brees. That's really the last thing you want, which is kind of why I was slightly hesitant to buying into Tre'Quan Smith. You know, when we first found out about the Michael Thomas news, I was like, oh no, I don't want this pigeonhole deep threat with a guy who has a deteriorating arm. That's the last thing I want. But his A-dot was right on par with Michael Thomas as was in week one, so right around 9. And they both saw the same amount of snap slots. So I like that they were using him in that fashion, and I think that's really what they're going to do going forward. You know, he looked good after the catch. He, you know, averaged 7 yards after the catch, and he ranked 4th highest among receivers with at least 2, you know, with 7 targets. So I definitely liked that from Tre'Quan Smith. So I think that he's a player that, if he's on your waiver wire still, I think that he's someone that's really worth investing into while we wait for Michael Thomas to return. And again, just because Michael Thomas comes back, you know, we see these players come back from these injuries and they really push it. And sometimes they're not 100%. We saw it with Kamara last year. You know, with these lower body injuries, it's really hard for guys to just come back and be the same players they were. I'm not saying that Thomas can't be his same self, but, you know, he's at a higher risk for re-injuring. And in that case, it would be Tre'Quan Smith that would take on that big role. So I really like Tre'Quan Smith.
Yeah, he really did impress after the catch. You know, going in, I was more Team Manny over Team Tre'Quan, just because Tre'Quan's had more or less a starting spot in this offense for the last 2-3 years and just hasn't really done much of anything with it. He flashes every once in a while, but even then, it's more just kind of broken play type stuff. So that, to me, that was the best game I've ever seen from him. You know, all the kudos in the world to Tre'Quan. Probably do need to adjust, you know, move him ahead of Manny Sanders, moving forward for however long Michael Thomas remains sidelined. Monday Night Football, great matchup here. Kansas City Chiefs at the Baltimore Ravens. Ravens opened up 2.5. That is up to 3.5. So obviously, you know, Mahomes, he had the Chargers game. I get it. He doesn't have great games against the Chargers, but, you know, obviously you're starting him. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, even in a game without the positive game script, we saw the targets. So that's great. He's out there. The question is, you know, you got those two guys, and Tyreek and Kelce are never leaving starting lineups, but is there anyone behind them that we can trust? Because in one of the league's best offenses, you would hope this would be a situation where, you know, more than two receivers could be consistent fantasy options. It just doesn't seem that way, but maybe Sammy Watkins is injured, and if he's out, we're going to need to monitor injury participation. You know, we haven't gotten a lot of word on it just yet, but If he's out, this is the moment that Mecole Hardman truthers such as myself have been waiting for. I believe he is the only real, like, quote unquote, handcuff wide receiver in the league. If any of Tyreek, you know, Demarcus Robinson or Sammy go down, Mecole is out there. I mean, we saw when he was out there even in the second half last week, Mahomes looks for him when he's out there, and they make plays when he looks for him. It's not like we have evidence of Mecole just going out there and being ineffective with his opportunities. He's been great with all the opportunities. He just can't get a bunch of them. So if we remove a receiver from the equation, bump the opportunities up to 5 or 8, I think we could be again looking at a Mecole Hardman season, even though we, you know, had to end it after week 1. So it's a situation where Watkins now being injured, we already saw him come back to earth after his, you know, usual week 1 explosion. I would be very cautious about going back to Sammy at less than 100% in this tough matchup as it is. If Sammy is out, though, I think that's when we could potentially get on the Mecole Hardman train. I believe Mecole actually had like a 80, 90-yard touchdown against the Ravens last year, if you're into a narrative street with that. So, Andrew, what's up with Lamar Jackson and company?
Yeah, Mecole Hardman, it's the complete opposite of Demarcus Robinson. You got Mecole Hardman, limited opportunities, super efficient, where you have Demarcus Robinson, who gets all the opportunities in the world and can't do anything with them. I don't know if he's just Patrick Mahomes' best friend. I don't really know how that works. Maybe because their lockers aren't even that much closer to each other, because I think they all were in the teens. So I don't know what's going
That's
on.
That's some next level research with the lockers right there.
Hey, man, Brady and Edelman, they were just like super in sync all the time because, But the Ravens, Marquise Brown, I think is prime for a bounce back spot here. You know, he's quiet in week 2, again, after playing really well against the Cleveland Browns, but the Chiefs, again, are another team that's really susceptible against deep balls. So they face the most deep ball attempts to opposing wide receivers since the start of the season. And four of Lamar Jackson's 5 deep passing attempts have been to Brown to the start this season. So, again, I think that Marquise Brown is in a good spot here to kind of flash his speed. You know, you have him, you have Tyreek Hill. I think that he's going to want to pound his chest a little bit and be like, hey, man, I got speed too. So I like Marquise Brown in this matchup. And then with the running back position, which is going to change every week. And I guess Greg Roman told us that this was going to happen. He said, hey, I'm going to change the running backs every week. So I guess maybe we should just kind of go every other. So week 1 was Dobbins, week 2 is Ingram. Now it's time to go back to Dobbins. That seems like the best move. So, I mean, last time these teams played, Mark Ingram had a season high in receptions. And I just think that this is a game where we could potentially see the Ravens not be playing with a lead. That has really not happened really frequently at all. I mean, basically, since Lamar Jackson took over, you know, since he's been the quarterback in 2019, it seems like 90% of their games, they play with leads. So we haven't really been able to see this passing attack in catch-up mode. And I think that this would be a game where, especially the Chiefs kind of coming off a poor offensive performance, they really want to come out and put up points on the board. So I think that J.K. Dobbins we could finally see him used as a pass catcher just a little bit more, whether it's like how they used Justice Hill when they were losing against the Titans, or like I mentioned before, when they played the Chiefs last time, Mark Ingram had a season high in receptions. He had 4 catches. So I think that this is a spot where you can play Dobbins, and I think he's going to produce.
It's just, you know, it's tough there because we got Gus Edwards siphoning off, you know, potentially close to double-digit carries himself. And guess what? Like, Gus is number 2 in the league right now in yards after contact per attempt. I mean, he's been great with his opportunities. We all want Ingram and Dobbins to be that guy. I think they deserve to be that guy, and they will, you know, I think get ahead of Gus eventually. But truly, 3 very good running backs in Baltimore. Things you hate to see in fantasy. All right, everyone, that's going to do it. We have gone through all 16 games. Looks like we made it just under an hour, which is good to see. That is always the goal for you. Andrew, what you got on the content schedule this week?
Yeah, I got a lot of stuff coming out. Got a buy low article coming out today. Got some start and sit 'em. Got a full game preview, full week preview coming out, and then some DFS picks on Saturday. So stay tuned, guys. Every day, there's new content coming out on the site.
Boom. Make sure you go follow Andrew on Twitter at @AndrewErickson_. This has been the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Ian Hart. It's bringing you this lovely show 5 times a week, Monday through Friday. We've got recapping the night games. Then we got our 16 game breakdown, which you just heard. And then we'll have a start sit and some DFS questions coming up on Thursday. So thank you again for tuning in, and take care, everyone. Until next time.